and welcome back to Inside Total Film. This week we're going to go slightly off-piste and talk about Star Wars. But first of all, let me introduce the people who are going to be weighing in on that. We've got Jordan Farley.
Hello.
We've got Matt Maiden.
Hello.
We've got Matthew Leyland.
Hello.
And I'm Jane Crowther. And we're going to be looking at the Star Wars saga, which is coming out on a big, beautiful box set, isn't it, Matthew?
Yes, 9 films and copious discs in April 20th.
Everything you could possibly need Star Wars and Skywalker in one box. But which is the best? So we've got 9 films to sift through, boys. Let's start with our number 9.
It's a great pleasure to see you again, lady.
It has been far too long, Master Kenobi. Annie? My goodness, you've grown.
So have you. Grown more beautiful, I mean. Just being around her again is intoxicating.
Be mindful of your thoughts, Anakin. They betray you. You have made a commitment to the Jedi Order, a commitment not easily broken.
So at number 9... that was Attack of the Clones. Why is this at the bottom of the pile? Matthew, you're a massive Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
Why has this one come out the lowest?
Because it's the worst, basically, unfortunately.
He's not wrong.
No, but seriously, what do you think?
I think maybe what was most disappointing about it is that Phantom Menace was disappointing, but then everyone thought, oh, well, the sequel, they'll pick it up. You know, Lucas hasn't made a film for so many years. He was a bit rusty. You know, he's getting into the heart of the story. But this was even more of a letdown than the first film, unfortunately.
I'm ashamed to say this is the Star Wars film I've seen the most at the cinema. I saw it 5 times.
Really? Wow.
On purpose?
I only saw it twice.
But I was just a bit bored, I think, that summer. There was not really much else going on. So
I've probably watched the asteroid field sequence in it about 10 times. But apart from that, it's dreadful.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a kind of cringy romance, which Lucas said he wasn't comfortable writing about, that, you know, but he had to do it. He's got to get Luke and Leia's parents together. But yeah, it just doesn't hang together.
And it ruins Boba Fett as well, which is his biggest sin.
Yeah.
Get him dead.
So it seems like it's not worth spending any more time on Attack of the Clones because, I mean, we can all agree it's rubbish.
And
it's
aged really badly as well. The CGI heavy.
I remember it looking amazing at the time, but now...
There's nothing physical about it, is there?
But you do get Yoda's lightsaber fire.
Yeah, it's not... Yeah.
It did blow my mind when I first saw it. Mm. But
you're talking this up the list now. So let's move on.
No Star Wars film can be that bad.
Let's move on to number 8.
You sure about this? Trusting our fate to a boy we hardly know?
Anakin Skywalker, meet Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I sense much fear in you.
The boy is dangerous. They all sense it. Why can't you?
Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
That was The Phantom Menace. So you already mentioned this one when we talked about the last film. So why does this one come above it?
Yeah, well, this is obviously still very low down on the list overall for the saga. But for me, it has a couple of amazing moments where overall the actual film itself I don't think is great and don't think it hangs together that well. But it has at least sort of 3 outstanding set pieces which have stood the test of time. I love sort of revisiting them. And the Darth Maul 3-way lightsaber battle at the end. Possibly my favourite lightsaber duel out of all the films.
Wow.
I actually really like The Phantom Menace. I know I'm not supposed to. Mainly because it was the first kind of new Star Wars film that I actually saw in the cinema. So I just have very fond memories of seeing it as at a formative age. And it kind of imprinted on me then. And like Matt says, there's such great moments in it. I think of the prequel films, it has by far the most iconic moments in it. The lightsaber battle, the pod race, and Duel of the Fates is just a spectacular bit of music.
Mm. Matthew, do you agree?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
What's one of your favourite moments from this one?
Yeah, anything, Duel of the Fates, anything with Darth Maul. I think Liam Neeson's a really good anchor for the film as well. I think he kind of gives it a bit of heft, and he's slightly different from other Jedi characters we'd seen before.
So it sounds like you will be getting this one out of the box set a little bit more than Attack of the Clones.
Well, I've seen it millions of times, so I don't need to see it again.
If you've got a kid, then Jar Jar's a big hit.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Jar Jar. I mean, I was wondering if we're going to touch on him. I mean, no, shudder. Dreadful,
groundbreaking,
right?
Though. He's a groundbreaking effect.
Is he, though?
He beat James Cameron to the punch. CG character.
He did, yeah. First fully CG character interacting with humans.
I think you need to give Jar Jar credit where it's due.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been ganged up by the Jar Jar fan club.
I find Jar Jar extremely annoying, but I know Ahmed Best, the actor who portrayed him, has suffered a lot of abuse in life. So
yeah,
it's not a very well-written character.
No. But did he have to do it in that weird way, that weird cadence and just so annoying?
Missy called Jar Jar Binks. Missy, your humble servant.
That won't be necessary.
Oh, but it is. 'Tis demanded by the gods, it is.
let's also gloss over that one then and move on quickly up because we want to spend more time talking on the good ones. Let's look at number 7.
The dark side of the Force is a pathway to many abilities some consider to be unnatural.
Is it possible to learn this power?
Not from a Jedi.
The Council wants you to report on all the Chancellor's dealings.
That's treason.
We are at war, Anakin.
Very dangerous putting them together. I don't think the boy can handle it. I don't trust him.
Revenge of the Sith.
Again, I'm going to champion this one a little bit because I would put this slightly higher on the list. Obviously, this has come out from a vote from the whole extended Total Film and Games Radar Plus team. I'd put Revenge of the Sith a little bit higher because I think of all the prequel trilogy, it does have a bit of dramatic heft. It does have some moments that stick with you, some of the kind of darker moments when they execute Order 66. And yeah, I think overall, it, out of all those films, it works with kind of, you know, as a standalone film, just to watch it and then kind of having an arc and then finally actually just getting on with the Darth Vader stuff, which should have happened earlier in the trilogy, really. But
the whole point of the prequel trilogy is Anakin's turn to the dark side. And it's only in this film where you actually get to see it and it actually seems to mean something and it makes the prequel series have a purpose.
But then it mucks up with the no.
Yeah.
No.
No.
Absolutely ruins Darth Vader's entire legacy.
Fighting words. Is there anything else good about it, Matthew?
I think Ewan McGregor feels like he's finally got comfortable playing Obi-Wan, whereas in the first two movies, he perhaps doesn't.
He grew into it, definitely.
Yeah. And he gives it a bit of emotion and kind of seems to enjoy being a proto Alec Guinness in this film.
So
that was nice to see.
Good hair and beard. He just looks terrible in The Phantom Menace.
He does, yeah.
I'm not sure that's a great recommendation if we're talking about Ewan's beard and hair.
I enjoy General Grievous as a character as well.
Me and Matthew talk about this a lot. General Grievous was a character in the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars animated series. He's a brilliant character in that animated series because he's like genuinely fearsome and scary.
Yeah.
But in this, he's just a total cartoon. Although I am grateful to this film for giving the world the hello there, Obi-Wan Kenobi meme. Yeah. Which has given me great pleasure.
That's going to outlive all the films.
Well, it's all about your meme game as well.
Exactly.
Okay, so that trilogy is taken care of and, you know, sitting at the bottom. So do you think this list is going to go the same way with the rest of the trilogies? Are they going to be lumped together? Shall we have
a
look and see what comes in at number 6?
People keep telling me they know me. No one does.
But I do.
I waited, and now you're coming together. Is your undoing.
So at number 6, we've got our first entry of the sequel trilogy with The Rise of Skywalker. The most recent film, probably the one that people have argued the most about, possibly. Yeah. Why is this at number 6 and not higher?
I will say I didn't love this film, but it's also the one that's most fresh in the memory, so maybe it needs time to settle. It just felt like such a missed opportunity to me. It could have been a cap on this entire saga, and it just felt like they were just making it up as they went along. Like, it felt like no planning went into the sequel trilogy, let alone it as a final chapter in the entire saga.
I mean, when we're used to the sort of martial plotting of sort of Marvel, where they absolutely know the arc of everything and they know what's happening 10 films down the line, this did feel a little bit of a mess. But I still enjoyed it. Whilst I was watching it, certainly, I was in the moment and, you know, really into it.
Yeah, I mean, J.J. Abrams knows how to put a set piece together. There's no doubt in that. But as a continuation of The Last Jedi, it just didn't feel like a sequel at all. It just felt like a completely independent film.
Did you like
film.
It more than Jordan, Matthew?
Yeah, I did. But yeah, at the same time, I would say it's the weakest of the sequel trilogy. But I mean, it did have quite a few production problems of Carrie Fisher's untimely death, obviously being one of them. But yeah, there is a bit of a tonal inconsistency, I think, with The Last Jedi, really. It's a shame that you didn't have JJ doing two in a row or Rian Johnson doing two in a row rather than this effect.
It does suffer from that, but there's no continuity really with that. Matt, were you equally in this boat? are you a hater?
I'm not a hater, no. I very much enjoyed it in the moment in the cinema. I saw it a couple of times, and both times I was sort of swept up in the adventure, and I thought it sort of nailed that aspect that you want from a Star Wars film, where it feels like an adventure and still amazing kind of production design and set design and creature design going on. So you got a lot of bang for your buck, but it almost felt like they had bitten off more than they could chew with bringing the Emperor back just for that last film in the trilogy. And kind of you had to be reintroduced to him, and then his whole plan was going on that didn't seem very planned. It was like, whoa, how's this all been happening in the background? And it's one of those films that doesn't really stand up to much scrutiny when you start thinking about it afterwards.
Yeah, and the Emperor's situation has been exacerbated in recent weeks by all the things we've learned that's going to be in the novelization. Where, you know, he was a clone and his son was a clone. It's like, why was none of this in the actual film?
Yes, information that could have been more useful earlier.
It just feels like a film which needed more work.
Yeah,
there's clearly something went on behind the scenes there.
Okay, so let's have a think about what might come in above it. What had got its shit together?
There are stories about what happened.
It's true. All of it. The dark side. A Jedi.
And that is The Force Awakens at number five. This was the film that brought it all back. We had a rest from Star Wars and we got this one. This was amazing to me, absolutely amazing, but it's languishing at number five, sort of halfway down the list. Why is it not higher up? But what's good about it as well? Jordan, come on.
I wouldn't say languishing.
For me, it should be higher.
At least three of the most iconic films of all time are above it. Yeah. So that's not too bad. I absolutely love The Force Awakens. I just think it's so much fun. I didn't expect after the prequels that someone could make me feel like I felt when I saw the original trilogy of films again. And JJ really got what made those original trilogy films feel so special. And just seeing Harrison Ford back as Han Solo was such a treat.
And then not back as Han Solo as well.
I also think as well, some of the new characters introduced are absolutely great, like particularly Kylo Ren and Rey. And obviously this was our first time meeting them, and I think Kylo Ren at his best, he really does sort of sit up there with the best of the Star Wars villains. And just from everything, from his look to Adam Driver's performance to his cool lightsaber hilt, he was great. So I'm glad that that trilogy gave us that.
The best film for Finn as well. It's the one film where he feels like he has a real arc to his character.
Also, you do have Daisy Ridley, who she hadn't really settled into it, I don't think, in this first one. I think there was quite a bit of criticism about her acting. She maybe didn't feel confident enough, I don't know, but she really felt much more confident in her role by the time we got round to the final film. But in this one, a little bit wooden, do we think?
I think that works for the character though, because the character's kind of going into this bigger universe, so she is a little rough around the edges to start with.
Yeah, I don't think she's bad in The Force Awakens. No. I just think she's much better in The Last Jedi.
Yeah,
The Rise of Skywalker.
She got better.
Yeah, I mean, this was her first movie.
Yeah, and it was such a delight just learning what her character was. They did a really good job marketing that film, because I just didn't suspect it would turn out she's the all-powerful Jedi at the end of it, because they, you know, sold Finn as the one holding the lightsaber in the trailer and on the posters.
Yeah, leaned into that patriarchal expectation.
Exactly, exactly. I'm pointing the finger at myself
there.
But no, it's very smart. I mean, that's where JJ's whole mystery box thing really paid off, because it delivered a real surprise.
Favourite moments in this one?
Chewie, we're home. Yeah. Magical. Brought a tear to my eye.
The ending, when you finally get to see Luke.
So
he's been hiding the whole movie.
Anything on the Falcon, really, for me. Just seeing that again on the big screen, especially after the relative disappointment of the prequel trilogy. And just having that rush of nostalgia and feeling like you're back somewhere familiar.
And just the build-up was so much fun as well. The pre-release. Yeah. The trailers.
Yeah.
And hearing that theme tune again.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
The first trailer came out about a year before the film came out, didn't it? I remember just huddling around like one of the computers at work and just waiting for Apple trailers to because everyone was trying to watch it at the same time. Had to keep refreshing the page. It's totally worth it.
Okay, shall we see what made number four?
When I found you, I saw raw, untamed power. And beyond that, something truly special.
So at number four, we've got The Last Jedi. Why is this coming up so high on the list? Come on. What's so great about this one, Matt?
This actually could have even been higher on the list for me. I absolutely love The Last Jedi. Writer-director Rian Johnson, he hadn't made a blockbuster anywhere near this scale before. I suppose the biggest film he'd made really was Looper, in terms of being a sort of sci-fi action film. But it did some really brave things with the Star Wars mythos and just took some really big swings, went in some unexpected directions. Most of all, I think, the way it dealt with Rey's parentage was unexpected. Obviously, everyone was expecting she was going to be related to some big figure from the Star Wars history. But the fact she was revealed to be a nobody, the fact that Snoke's exit was so kind of unexpected and dramatic, and I love that whole fight in the Red Room. And I actually personally, I know obviously this is a bone of contention because so many people hate this, but I loved the way it dealt with Luke as well. I loved seeing a different side of Luke Skywalker and seeing what had happened to him in that time and how he kind of resolves it and redeems it. But
and that he's grumpy.
Yeah.
We've always seen a little bit of grumpy Luke, you know, when he was doing his training with Yoda, he was a grumpy little Luke then. So I like seeing that sort of return to that sort of I'm stomping around milking things and you know, just doing my own thing and being grumpy. I enjoyed seeing that.
Yeah, I love seeing Yoda come back as well. Yeah, in The Last Jedi. That was a real, like,
the actual puppet as well. Yeah, CGI.
And Frank Oz voicing him and puppeteering. Yeah, that was a bit of magic, that scene.
Yeah, because loads of people who I respect absolutely hate what they did with Luke and other things in this film because it just felt perhaps too different to the Star Wars they'd grown up with. But I like the fact you weren't just getting refed the same thing and it was willing to go in a new direction. But then, as we kind of discussed previously, that was all pretty much undone by Rise of Skywalker, which is what makes Rise of Skywalker a bit of a disappointment, the way they just immediately check
renege on Rose as well. Like, Rose is built up as a big new supporting character and then she's barely in episode 9, which was a shame.
Even though Canto Bight isn't the standout part of The Last Jedi, it does have a point. Like, it's not there for no reason, just to fill screen time. And I do like that Rian Johnson also upends expectations with these films as well. You know, they go on this big adventure and then they just fail at the end, is great.
I also want one of those, like, twinkly ice fox things.
I'd like
one as a pet. So
might be a bit prickly to stroke, though.
Yeah. Would you keep it in the fridge or the freezer? But I would like one.
I also like the fact that with the whole Canto Bight sequence, you get to see the cost of this war and you get to see who's profiting from it. Something which is just never addressed in these Star Wars films. And obviously it's only really hinted at here, but it just helps expand the world in the way the best Star Wars films do kind of hint at this bigger world that exists outside of the frame.
And I would say that the Holdo maneuver is probably my single favorite moment from the entire, like, sequel trilogy. It's such a good moment. I remember watching that in the Royal Albert Hall at the UK premiere of it and my jaw just dropping.
Oh, a little bit of a premiere name drop there.
Did I mention he was sat behind me? Royal premiere?
Who was it?
It was Will and Harry.
Was it?
Yeah.
Before Harry quit?
You were sat next to me, in fact.
I know, but I'm not the one that's boasting about it. Shall we see what made our big three then? What's at number three? That is Return of the Jedi. This is my favourite one of all the Star Wars films. I love this film. Jabba's palace is just brilliant. I love Jabba the Hutt. I'm not so keen on Leia's obvious outfit when she's in the palace, but I love that whole thing. I love that whole opening bit. And just that Luke is now badass and he's just like, he's full of his potential and he's here to take names and kick ass. And I love that because we've been building up to that all through this series. And just to see that is just a real thrill. What do you think about it, Jordan?
Yeah, I really love Return of the Jedi. I just love the Ewoks. I know people don't love the Ewoks, but
I know you're so very fond of them, aren't you? And their songs.
Just look so cuddly. Yeah. I'm on the record as saying that the end of this film is improved by Yub Nub being replaced by the Ewok celebration song.
And now you've earwormed me. Thank you. Yeah. That's in there now.
I just think the Yub Nub songs are stupid. I prefer John Williams' Pan Pipes much better.
I adore this film. It's my favourite childhood film. I saw it 12 times in the cinema.
Wow.
With my Harrison Ford worshipping mum, who took me every week. So
mum was getting something different out of it.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, this is a very, very special film for me. And I think it holds up as well. I think it's got the most emotional moments. It's got this fantastic triple level climax. Yeah, I think it's just a great wrap up to that trilogy. And I think a lot of people would have been quite happy to have left it there as well, to be honest.
What about you, Matt?
Yeah, this was actually the first one I saw as a kid.
Wasn't it very confusing?
Sort of. I remember being surprised, you know, with the whole Darth Vader, Luke, father, son thing. But certain things in it just really stuck with me. Just these kind of indelible images that just stayed with me, such as the speeder chase, the Sarlacc pit. I still think it's quite incredible, the kind of final scenes between Darth and Luke.
Yeah.
I think it's really quite moving, and it still gets to me, that scene. So despite watching the map sync and kind of ruining the films for myself,
I've got really very fond memories as a kid, that scene, like that you actually got to see what he looked like inside, and he was sort of sweaty and ill looking and wrinkly and just looked feeble inside there, when I don't know what I thought would be inside, but it wasn't that.
Dave Prowse. Green Cross Code, man.
I just don't know. It was a good shock for me. I liked it.
What I find really interesting about Return of the Jedi is it does things that other Star Wars films do, but it does them much better. Like Matthew was saying, the kind of three-way finale where it's intercut in between three different set pieces. You know, George Lucas tried to do that again in The Phantom Menace, and it just comes across as like confusing and muddled in that film. And in Return of the Jedi, you get the Emperor in there, and he's effectively only in Return of the Jedi. He's seen very briefly in The Empire Strikes Back, but there's no real setup for that character beyond that. But yet he's still so menacing and threatening and just absolutely brilliant in Return of the Jedi, whereas they tried to pull the same trick in The Rise of Skywalker, and he just feels deeply unsatisfying. I mean, George Lucas knew what he was doing back then.
And he doesn't now, is that what we're saying?
He might do. Come back, George. Yeah. All is forgiven.
Shall we move on to number two?
20th Century Fox and George Lucas bring you an adventure unlike anything on your planet. Star Wars.
Stop that ship! Blast them!
So at number two, drum roll, boys, it is A New Hope. This has been pipped to the post by another film, which we'll talk about in a minute. But this one is a corker, isn't it? We'd never seen anything like this film before when it arrived. Why was it so different?
It's just so incredibly self-contained. I mean, it's just that whole universe on a plate that seemed to have come out of nowhere. I mean, it really revived science fiction, like popular science fiction at the cinema. It kind of carried on that whole wave of summer blockbusters that was started by Jaws. It gave us so many different iconic characters. And it felt lived in as well, whereas before when you'd have things like 2001, where it all looked very pristine
and
clean. Yeah, I mean, this is all covered in dirt and dust. It really does feel like it's a universe that exists somewhere out there.
But people were not thinking this was going to be a hit. I mean, they were calling it, George's sort of space opera.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford really didn't think it was going to take off.
Yeah, so it's just amazing vindication for George, because he had this whole vision in his head and no one else could quite see how it all fit together apart from him.
And we embraced it from the minute that
the Star Destroyer soars over our heads chasing the blockade runner.
Yeah, it's amazing. The sound as well on this, like this is Dolby. I think when I saw it, I don't think I'd ever really experienced that sort of rumbly, feel it in your heart feeling of sort of, whoa, it was amazing. That was felt really groundbreaking to me as a kid, but it kind of was at the time as well. And obviously the special effects were pretty good at the time.
And to me, this is my favourite, actually my personal favourite. This would be my number one. Just because something which hasn't been mentioned yet, all that stuff is very true. And like, I love the fact it does feel like such a enormous world, but there's just such a pure fairy tale sense to it, like, and just such a sense of adventure. And I love just everything about it, like the kind of infiltrating of bases, swinging across dangerous sort of gaps, dressing up as the bad guys. Just love that kind of sense of adventure. Yeah.
We'd seen him in things before, but you know, this was him playing this, you know, cocky, sort of just big dick energy Han Solo, you know, amazing. We all fell for him, men and women alike. He was just so charming and such a sort of charismatic screen presence. really was like, wow,
yeah,
Harrison Ford, I want to see more of him.
It was star making and then some.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And you can't underestimate the impact of, you know, ILM's visual effects. That really felt like a groundbreaking moment. It really did give you something that you'd never seen before. And John Williams' music as well. Mm. Just
amazing.
If I was alive when this film first came out, I would have probably just kept going back to the cinema just to hear his music. It's so resonant,
powerful,
and iconic.
Yeah. What was your favorite moment in this film?
Too many to pick from, surely. Yeah, I mean, the trench run is just
the trench run
forever burned into my memory.
Matthew?
Han's last minute rescue.
I'd be tempted to go for the trash compactor scene just because, that sense of a sort of fairy tale quest really just is embodied in that moment, I think.
Yeah, and I always love when that thing popped up and looked around then. I loved it. And I also love that whole catchphrase, I've got a bad feeling about this. It's just, and that sort of continued on. I mean, I think I probably went around saying that for weeks, having seen it. It's a great, great film, but it has been pipped to the post by one other. And I think it's obvious what that is now. Let's take a listen.
A galactic odyssey against oppression. A big, new, sprawling space adventure in the Star Wars saga, The Empire Strikes Back.
So that is Empire Strikes Back. That is our number one. Should we just recap on what came below it? So at number 9, we had Attack of the Clones. At 8, Phantom Menace. At 7, Revenge of the Sith. At 6, The Rise of Skywalker. At 5, The Force Awakens. At 4, The Last Jedi. 3, Return of the Jedi. 2, A New Hope. And at number 1, our absolute crowning glory, Empire Strikes Back. Why is this number 1 of all of these films? Jordan, why is this so revered?
It's become a cliche to say that sequels should be, you know, darker and deeper, but this is a rare sequel where darker and deeper actually means better for my money. It just felt so much more complex, so much more layered. You have probably the most iconic twist of all time, except maybe Psycho, like neck and neck with Psycho. You have the AT-AT walkers on Hoth. You have Yoda. You have just so much amazing stuff in there. You have the asteroid field. It just feels like a film that's assembled together from just iconic moments. It's like there's zero fat on it.
Matt, is this still number one?
No, it's actually not for me. A New Hope is my number one, but this would be a close second. And again, I kind of agree with everything Jordan said there. It's an exceptionally good sequel, and one of those sequels that just hugely benefits from hitting the ground running, because you've been introduced to these characters and it just gets straight in there and gets expanding the world. And it does feel like you actually move on in terms of, like, Luke actually develops a lot in this film, and you get to see him doing a lot of different stuff. You get introduced to a lot of new iconic Star Wars characters as well, like Yoda. So it's kind of expanding, but without losing that essence of what made the first one so great. So it does kind of a really great job on that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and it doesn't kind of go crazy as well. I mean, it starts off big and actually gets smaller as it goes on. It gets more intimate, so it's kind of a reverse of the first film. You have all the big battle at the start, and then it just comes down to like a family reunion that goes quite badly at the end.
And it's not afraid to sort of leave on a cliffhanger, knowing that the next one is coming along, which wasn't something we sort of saw. Franchises were not a huge thing then. So this enticing thing oh my God, it's a cliffhanger, but we know that we're going to get an answer to it. Delicious. Yeah.
We had to wait 3 years.
I know, gosh.
And no internet.
Marvel would not be having that, would they?
Yeah, and you thought waiting 1 year after Infinity War was bad.
Yeah, it's so good. So, favourite scene out of this one, Jordan?
Oh, God. Asteroid Field. Again, I absolutely love it for John Williams' music, primarily, but visually it's just spectacular as well.
Right. For me, I'm torn between the lightsaber duel between Luke and Darth Vader, because it's just so atmospheric. I think out of all the lightsaber duels, it's the most atmospheric one. And the Battle of Hoth that Jordan mentioned before, because just the fact that it was in the snow and these AT-ATs just felt so big. And again, there was that sort of sense of fun in bringing them down by kind of tying up their legs. So just, that again just made such an impression on me when I was younger that I've sort of never really forgotten.
I love Yoda fighting with R2 when he's hitting him with his cane. They're fighting over Luke's lunch.
That's just a very mundane moment.
It's so funny though.
It's a human moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think people forget that Empire is the darkest one, but it's also the funniest.
I have to say, I'm tied between the whole like climbing inside that creature and keeping warm in the snow and it's smelling the so tauntaun. Bad with also the obviously the romantic sign off of Han Solo. Yeah. Mm. Just one of the best lines in cinema ever.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
You know, it's there's no sort of romantic overtures. It's purely, I know. And then he's frozen. Oh my God, how romantic. I loved it. And sad. And yeah, again, I couldn't wait to see how they were going to get him out of that, because surely they had to. He surely wasn't an ice cube forever. Come on, that love had to live. So yeah, that was my favourite. So will we be watching that one out of the box set the most, or will you be revisiting some of the ones that we've perhaps said were bad and you might want to revisit to reevaluate?
I only actually saw The Rise of Skywalker once, so I feel like I'll probably revisit that first to reaffirm my beliefs that it's not good.
A hate watch.
Precisely.
Is what you're saying.
I think I'm destined just to keep revisiting them all every yeah. so often. I'm just going to go through them all, wondering if they've changed at all or if I've changed. And yeah, so I think I'm just destined to do that for yeah, as long yeah, as they keep releasing discs.
Yeah, I'd probably watch Rise of Skywalker again, because I only saw it twice at the cinema. Which
oh,
is
that's not enough. Yeah.
You've got 10 more times to catch up with Return of the Jedi.
Way behind.
So that's our top 9 of the Skywalker saga. Do let us know what yours is by telling us on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. And don't forget, there are amazing deals on a subscription to Total Film right now. You can get 5 issues for £5, €5, or $5. Amazing deal. It will also help you get through that lockdown and keep you up to date with everything that's happening in movies. So go to www.myfavoritemagazines.co.uk, and we will see you next time on Inside Total Film. So everybody say goodbye.
Bye.
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 Goodbye.